Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Ohio Exopolitics. It's the 24th of June, 2020 at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. I am going to read a little bit from a contact report called Sfaf's Explanation. And as you probably know, back in 1943, young Billy, who was about 5 years old, started getting telepathic messages from Sfaf, and eventually Sfaf landed his silvery pear-shaped craft in a field not far from Billy's house. And Billy was brought up into the ship. It felt as if he was being lifted up by ghostly hands. And the craft went into Earth orbit, I believe 70,000 meters or so. And then Sfaf starts to tell Billy that about some of his previous lives, that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in this particular contact report where we're starting here, Sfaf is going to tell Billy about his future life when he gets married and the difficulties he will have there and how that directly affects his mission in a positive way. So let me read a few lines here and maybe elaborate on things a bit. It says, "As with all really great proclaimers and sages who have taught here on the earth since time immemorial and have brought the entire humanity the teaching of the spirit, peace, love, knowledge, harmony, wisdom, as well as real freedom, you have also been born an inconspicuous human being. And as with all genuine proclaimers and sages, you will also first have to learn very much before you will take on and fulfill your task at your predetermined time. Thereby, you must, however, consider that you will have to endure a quite adventurous and hard life, often full of privation, which from the year 1965 will still increase in a form which will demand very many powers from you in every regard. This will particularly lead back to your spouse, who you will meet and marry in the named year. However, is inevitable and will be closely connected to your mission." So when Billy was in the Middle East, he studied in the Ashoka Ashram for a while. Asket would, and her ship would hover over the ashram, and Billy and her would be seen walking in the gardens, talking. The people there in the ashram thought of Asket, which is Billy's second contact, his second mentor, as kind of a quote-unquote god. But during this time is when Billy had the great accident where he lost his arm, and he met his wife and they got married. So just a little background information there. "Hence your marital step is therefore necessary, because your true powers, which you need from that time onward, will only be built up through this path which you must take. Realize, nevertheless, that everything concerning this which intrudes on you will be merciless and absolutely inevitable, because only by you passing and also mastering this hard lesson will you be able to fulfill your duty unswervingly and without fickleness and without doubt, absolutely honestly, modesty, and in real love and joy for your task and for your fellow human beings. Thereby, however, you will not be spared from grief, of which there will be very much, nor from libelous accusations and hate, which often lead back to your spouse. Yet you must powerfully and unwaveringly confront these tasks, which will also be underpinned by attempts against your life, because only if you master everything will you be able to fulfill your mission." So people are trying to kill Billy. His wife is making up lies about him. He's already lost his left arm in a bus accident. This is not a person that has lived an easy life. His life has been very, very difficult. And I think it was meant to be that way in the sense that he had to develop things, certain things in his material consciousness very quickly. You got to, of course, he had all these previous lives, all the Vorgängers, Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and a bunch of others I didn't even mention. But this lifetime, he has to grow up quickly and there's a lot of pressure. And he has to be prepared quickly so he can be as productive as possible. Because really, his whole purpose in this incarnation is to put all this information down in writings, in books like the Mach der Gedanken, the Might of Thoughts, books like the Psyche, books like the Art of Leben, the Way to Live, Kelch der Wahrheit, the Goblet of Truth, and the Talmud of Emmanuel, and then all these contact reports. So he's speaking with Thoth, and Thoth has let him know that, you know, there's going to be some difficulties. Yet you must powerfully and unwaveringly confront these attacks, which will also be underpinned by attempts against your life, because only if you master everything are you able to fulfill your mission. However, you will not have to endure the worst machinations forever, because your spouse will maliciously turn away from you when she finally recognizes that you follow your path unwaveringly and that you will fulfill your mission. However, she will, however, be so blinded by hate that she will covertly spread further slander about you and practice intrigues against you. But you will not have to pit yourself against it if you are studious, as I instruct you to be. You are already now wise for your age in a way that old human beings feel drawn to you, enjoy conversation with you, and are astonished over the knowledge that is now already yours, and thus also often ask for your advice. So even though he's like 5 or 6 years old, these older people are asking him for advice because they recognize that he has a great wisdom, even at just an incredibly young age, and his demeanor is very neutral positive, which is what we learn in the Might of Thoughts. And this is kind of a child's mode of thinking, is to search for the truth and be inquisitive. Now, unfortunately, with our religions and with our school system, that is attacked at a very young age. So children get kind of scarred and then they stop searching for the truth, which is their natural curiosity. I want to jump to the Talmud of Emmanuel, chapter 18. And at this point, Emmanuel, this what's going to be discussed here is Emmanuel's time in the tomb. So let me continue here. It says, lacking understanding, they curse the truth, which yet must get through. They curse the true prophets and stone, kill, and impale them. And they tried to kill Emmanuel. But since the teaching of the truth, the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of life must be brought among the people, the true prophets have to bear great burdens and sufferings under the curse of the people. Just as they persecuted the true prophets, they also seek after my life and will seek after the life of the prophet of the new time from 1844. So this is Emmanuel speaking about Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, who's in the future, is one of his future incarnations. So, and the new age, the new time, as it said, began in 1844, and this is the age we're in now, and it has to do with energies coming from the center of our galaxy. It speeds up evolution. The providence of the determination says, that shall also come true for me, insofar that I am an innocent man and will be declared guilty. However, it will not come to pass that I am killed, but while in a state of near death, I will be considered dead for 3 days and three nights, and will be placed in a rock tomb so that the parable of Jonah will be filled. Well, Emmanuel fulfilled the parable of Jonah, but the parable of Jonah was kind of a confused sort of thing anyway, because there really it was not this Jonah character that got swallowed by a great fish slash whale, however you want to interpret it. And he didn't survive in this fish for 3 days. It's discussed earlier in the Talmud. Helpers, friends from a distant land who are well versed in the art of healing, will be my nurses and benefactors until my escape, flight from the tomb on the third day. So then my calling mission task will be finished among foreign people in a distant land with the rising sun, since my pathway leads me there. It shall come to pass I will obtain a certain cognition and increase my knowledge and generate a new power in the spirit consciousness, so that I can understand dying and near-death powerlessness and can teach about it. The next chapter here is chapter 19, A Child's Mode of Thinking. So I kind of showed you Billy with Thoth and Billy's mode of thinking. And then we're going to talk about the way a child hungers for truth and searches for truth and how important that is. It came to pass that some disciples and disciplesses stepped up to Emmanuel and asked, "Who is the greatest in the spirit consciousness?" Emmanuel called a child to him and placed the youth in their midst, and he said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn yourself around and become like children, you will not be great in the spirit consciousness. Thus, those who research and search, and those who gather cognitions and thirst for knowledge like this child will be great in the spirit consciousness. Those who research and search for the truth and find it like such a child will also be the greatest within themselves." And now the explanation. What must be said with regard to the instruction of a child in terms of spiritual teaching is that today, with most children, their openness to questions, searching, and learning is unfortunately already destroyed in the first months and years of life by religious and sectarian irrational teachings. And that's what I was saying earlier, is that people's natural hunger for the truth and for searching for information is destroyed by religions, it's destroyed in the schools. The text in the Gospels of the New Testament has contributed a lot in the Christian world to the present child cult, by which it does not go well for the children. But actually, it is not just today that a child's openness to questions, searching, and learning becomes suppressed. That's the word I was looking for, is that not only in the children, but in people, the search for the truth is suppressed, and it was done intentionally, for example, like by the CIA, which made up terminology like conspiracy theory, which was designed to suppress this natural curiosity and tendency to search for the truth. Much better to search for the truth yourself and be wrong than to become dependent on some expert. Always search for the truth yourself. Always think about things yourself and test things. Because searching and learning becomes suppressed already in the first months of life and destroyed in the course of the first 3 years by a completely wrong upbringing and non-instruction, and by religious wrong upbringing and wrong teaching of the child with regard to the teaching of the truth, the teaching of the spirit, and the teaching of life and the sense of life. This evil already existed in early times. This is why it was so instructively addressed by Emmanuel. Unfortunately, the whole thing was misunderstood and was not put into action in a logical manner, whereby everything forms so severely in the course of time that the child already becomes negatively influenced by the parents in a religious and sectarian manner during his or her infancy, and becomes wrongly guided in some form and deceived to untruth with respect to the effective truth of the creational natural laws and recommendations. And what are the creational natural laws? Well, just a few of them. 1, brotherly love. 2, striving. 3, the harmony in the thinking. 4, system and order. You have a schedule to your life. You do things at certain times. The laws related to the population of a planet our size. Creational natural law of reincarnation. But I think that the learning to think in a neutral, positive, equalized way, to be neutral, positive in your thinking, to continually strive, and to have this harmonious brotherly love, those are very important 3 laws there. Such that it becomes practically impossible for the child to free him or herself from it again and to go the way of conscious evolution and dignity, the virtues, the true love, the true knowledge, as well as the deference for life. But for anyone who does not heed this truth and embraces confused teaching and neither searches nor finds, it would be better if a millstone would be hung around his neck and he or she would have to search for it in the sea of the truth, there where it is the deepest and where the core of truth is all hidden. And this is the explanation of how this was falsified in the New Testament. So a lot of Billy's explanations and descriptions are about how things were falsified in the New Testament, or how people have misunderstood things over time. This is chapter 9 of the Talmud of Emmanuel. Now, the falsified passage in the New Testament with the millstone around the neck is so absurd that even an unknowing one with regard to reality and the truth of it must recognize that the New Testament presentation, namely hanging a millstone around one's neck and letting that one who disregards the truth drown in the sea, where it is the deepest, concerns a calumny with regard to Emmanuel's real statement. Emmanuel was a human being to whom life was venerable, and he never showed contempt for life in any wise, let alone made such a reprehensible statement about it as is shoved into the mouth in the New Testament. He should have rather bitten off his tongue than to have made such a statement, which is equivalent to an invitation to murder. The real statement of Emmanuel, it would be better if a millstone would be hung around his or her neck, and that he or she would have to search for it in the sea of truth, there where it is the deepest and where the core of all the truth is hidden, becomes a parable. The millstone in this parable represents the heavy burden or load which the one who disregards the truth has to bear, or which is imposed on him or her as an unavoidable duty, that he or she begins to search for, to find, and to learn the true knowledge and the wisdom in the deep sea of reality and the truth of it. So that's an eye opener and a kind of a, you know, the Meyer information, it always takes you places that at first you did not realize where you were going to go. So in any way, so this is part of the big picture here. We've got a boy who grew up in northern Switzerland in Bulak around 1943, who had telepathic contact and then physical contact with an extraterrestrial human who was very, very advanced in his technology, and was associated, and he was human. He was human looking. They were not Earth humans, but they were humans from the Pleiaden star system, which has been called the Pleiadian star system. These Pleiaden are some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. They're in a different space-time configuration. Not to say that all extraterrestrials are in a different space-time configuration. No, that's not the truth. But our DERN universe, D-E-R-N, is 46 trillion years old. It was created in something called the Zohar, or what we would call the Big Bang today. There is a sister universe called the Tao universe, which was also created about this time. Our universe is roughly egg-shaped, and the Meyer Information calls it the creation. It has an intelligence within it, and this intelligence is a different kind of living being than you or I or any animals. For example, cats, dogs, horses, pigs, lions, tigers, all animals have a personality and a free will. They're called Vesen. Well, there's a different kind of life. It's called a Wesenheit in the German. And sands, stones, gases, water, certain energies, and the universal consciousness is the Wesenheit. It has no personality. It's neutral. It's neutral, positive, equalized, and balanced. It has no gender. It's not a god. There really is no god in the sense that the religions teach. It's evolving, and it lives according to the laws of a higher consciousness power called the Ur-creation. And our universe was created from an idea that the Ur-creation had. And our creation is bound to the laws of a higher consciousness power. And these laws include the creational natural laws like love, which is brotherly love, or effective love, as it's called, striving, which is means to continually struggle and evolve. Can be cleaning your garage out, it can be reading the Meyer material, it can be doing your day job. But down to the smallest atomic building block, the creation is devoted to the striving. And then there's harmonious thinking, which would be like this. You could say, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic. I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. But I do recognize that life has its challenges, and there are going to be some difficulties that I have to overcome. So this is a neutral, positive thinking. This is the harmony, and the system and order is another creational natural law. So our universe has these creational natural laws, and the best thing to do is to start thinking about these creational natural laws and trying to conform to them, and doing so will positively affect your life force. And thoughts radiate as tremendous forces and encounter other life forms, which draw these toward themselves like magnets. So your positive, neutral positive, healthy, confident, optimistic thinking will, people will be like magnets, and they'll just draw these thoughts to them. And the more your development or our development here on the earth goes toward the direction of truth, the higher the average lifespan develops again. And so our genetic factors are altered by our consciousness. Our life-supporting factors will be regulated again. These were badly impaired over the course of tens of thousands of years, particularly by the religions. Remember us talking about the child there who was very inquisitive, that gets suppressed by the authority structure within the religion or within the school. See, that was his natural desire to strive, his natural desire to learn more. And it would have helped him in his sense of living a life in harmony. It would have made him more open to love. All of these things work together, you see, these creational natural laws. And if you don't follow the creational natural laws, you'll be knocked around in life like a human being. Let me read this here from the My Thoughts. Consequently, the human being is shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of life. As long as he or she believes himself to be a helpless creation of external conditions and influences. But if he or she recognizes the truth that he himself or herself is the master of his or her learning, as well as the master of his or her thoughts and all the effects which arise from them, then he or she will also recognize that the environment and the circumstances of life do not form him. So the environment and circumstances of life do not form us. Rather, he or she herself forms them through the might of his or her thoughts. At least those environmental conditions and circumstances of life for which he or she is responsible. So our thoughts, if you can develop the neutral positive thought, a mindful thoughts, what I mightfully think manifests for me. If you can do that, then you will start to affect and bring about a positive change in your life through this healthy thinking, this healthy perspective. Along with the actual universal creational power of the human being and him or herself is an independent creational power which manifests in the form of the mind of thoughts and the resulting effects. So we have within us an independent creational power which will manifest in the form of the mind of thoughts and the resulting effects. As soon as this is recognized, further cognitions and the knowledge resulting from them will quickly follow. For example, that one's own creational power arises from the consciousness in the form of the might of thoughts. So that's a little quick look at the big picture and how to positively affect your life force by thinking harmoniously neutral positive thoughts. Okay, we're out of time already. Have a great day. My pleasure speaking with you again. Good luck and use the neutral positive thinking power that you have in your own consciousness. Have a good day. Bye-bye.